Everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Art O'Cal here with you every Tuesday, Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well as the NHL on ESPN YouTube. Greg and Artem, just two guys born on third base. Their parents bought podcasting networks so that they could hone their craft at a young age and just to get 50 likes on each episode.
That's right. That's
We're all lucky us.
Products a silver spoon in our mouths. How are we able to orate so well on podcasts, Arda, with a silver spoon in our mouths? We'll get to that later.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second. There's massive news that we've been tracking for weeks and weeks and weeks that we have to start the podcast with. And that is, my friend, the cargo has been found. The bobbleheads are safe. Yager fans, rejoice. You will be able to redeem your vouchers to get an actual Jaromir Jagr bobblehead. The saga is over.
The saga is over. According to Penguins President of Business Operations, Kevin Acklin, the team was notified last week that, quote, a special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property to a secure warehouse located in Ontario, California. The truckload of Jagr bobbleheads arrived in Pittsburgh on Monday, and they are expected to be delivered to PPG Paints Arena within the next week. All the fans who got them vouchers with them barcodes can go redeem them at an upcoming Penguins game or on a day in which you can drive through the parking garage near the arena and then redeem your bobblehead voucher there. The thing that struck me about the statement, A special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property. Are we to assume, Arda, the Penguins have negotiated with terrorists? I thought we don't do that in this country.
No, absolutely not. They've negotiated with certain general managers that they may classify as such, but not definitely not the actual term.
There's so much we don't know about this. As a journalist, it's maybe a little bit oogie in that we're basically just like taking the Penguins' word in a lot of this. Like, we've contacted the authorities. I don't think we ever really heard who the authorities are. We negotiated the return of the stolen property to a secure warehouse. What was the negotiation? What did you have to give them? Like a Sidney Crosby stick? Like what is this whole situation? I feel like we're in crazy land with what's happened with these Jagr bobbleheads. And we're just like, we're all just so interested in the story that we're just taking whatever the Penguins say. We're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Special ops team negotiated the return of the bobbleheads that were stolen off the boat. Like, we need to know so much more than what we know about this thing. It's making me crazy.
I can't wait for like some documentary years from now where like someone in the front office is like, you know, negotiating to reacquire the bobbleheads was easier than negotiating with Pat Verbeek or Dude, like something like that.
It ain't a documentary. It is Sudden Death 2. Bring back Van Damme. Bring back he's a firefighter who also negotiates the return of stolen crates from boats. And then we got Sudden Death too. He's been waiting for a sequel script for what now? 25 years, 30 years. It's time.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug. Nostalgia is a hell of a drug. And I'm sure that people would, would watch Sudden Impact too. Let's be honest.
Sudden Death, sir. Sudden Impact is a completely different movie. And by the way, you're completely right. We are in an era where we are seeing sequels that are created over, you know, decades of time. This could easily be Sudden Death : Maverick starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. Reacquiring the Jagr bobbleheads from the nefarious villains who stole them from the Penguins.
Hey, we're getting a second Billy Madison, right? So, I mean, anything can happen. So the Pittsburgh Penguins hanging on for dear life. Their playoff hopes seem to be fading. But with the playoff picture coming into focus, we thought, you know what? This is a good opportunity for us to ask a couple of wacky questions about the teams that are most likely going to the postseason. Question number one, which team has the best vibes? Where are the vibes most immaculate in a team's pursuit of the Stanley Cup wish?
Before we get to that, an important correction, courtesy of our producers. Hmm. It is not Billy Madison 2, Arda. It is Happy Gilmore 2.
Oops, Happy Gilmore 2.
Which is important for us as a hockey podcast because it means that we will be covering Happy Gilmore 2. And also, the potential for current Boston Bruins cameos in Happy Gilmore 2, probably pretty high. So excited about that.
Oh, totally.
The best vibes right now It's the Colorado Avalanche, man. I mean, not only the Nathan MacKinnon best player in hockey debate that we had earlier this week, but the trade deadline acquisitions, Mittelstadt, Walker, seem like they fit in flawlessly. This team is rolling right now. They look like a buzzsaw right now. They look like a team that is fixated on getting that cup back into Denver. The vibes are immaculate right now for the Colorado Avalanche. I'd have to say that they are the best vibes amongst the Stanley Cup contenders. What say you?
Hard to argue that. Certainly in the West and the East, I'll pick the Carolina Hurricanes because just after the trade deadline, Jake Guentzel going into, it was at least, I think it was Thursday, he had not seen a goal against in a Hurricanes uniform since joining the team. He was 16-0, 16 goals for while on the ice and 0 goals against. I mean, that to me screams immaculate vibes. That line is clicking. Aho, Jarvis, and Guentzel. They love the chemistry's already there. They are great friends already off the ice. Just ask them. And they're on the ice, they're just gangbusters already. So they addressed exactly what they needed to address. Everything seems to be working for them. So in terms of vibes, at least in the East, I'll go Hurricanes. What team are you most curious about or baffled by heading into the playoffs? I'm going to pick the Nashville Predators.
Oh, yeah.
We were not talking about them until they went on this absolute heater of heaters. Like, this is the King of Kings, Triple H level heater of heaters to end the season, essentially. And if this keeps going, you know, we always wish we talk about a team gets hot at the right time. You know, maybe we'll be talking the opposite if Nashville cools down right at the start of the playoffs. But my goodness, right now, accentuated by an epic comeback they just had in their last game. They were down by 3 in the third period and tying it up, going to overtime and winning. Like, this team can do no wrong right now.
Yeah. Would you say they have the unforgettable fire, Arda? Would you say that they have elevation in the standings, Arda?
What you would say? I would say, that's exactly what I would say.
Team for me, and by the way, Nashville's a great pick because, like, they are either a team that is going to be on one of those St. Louis Blues-esque runs where, like, they just turn it on and it never goes off and they, like, win the cup, or they're going to be a team that just, like, will totally peak by, like, April 10th. You're absolutely right. I'm trying to figure out the New York Rangers. Now, we're going to talk about the Rangers and their Stanley Cup chances a bit later in the program. But for me, like, I cannot figure out whether this team is going to be able to put the total package together in the playoffs. In the last month of the season, the New York Rangers have a 45.6% expected goals percentage, okay, at 5-on-5. That's 27th in the NHL, okay? They score more than what's expected of them. They give up less than what's expected of them, which obviously has a lot to do with Igor Shesterkin and Jonathan Quick. Can a team that's 18th on the year in 5-on-5 goals, but 7th on the power play as far as goals produced, win the Stanley Cup? It's kind of the same argument I feel like we had last year with the Rangers a little bit as well, but this year it's even more accentuated. They're such a baffling team because you watch them sometimes, Arda, as you and I have, in person no less, and they look like they win the cup. And then you look underneath the hood, you're like, or they're completely susceptible to a team like Carolina or Boston coming in and completely shutting them out down at 5-on-5 and not taking a penalty to let them score on the power play. Like, I cannot figure out the Rangers for the life of me, but it could be the year. Who knows?
Well, they are not a team that you have completely soured on. A team that I have soured on right now is the Vancouver Canucks. I'm buying into, whether it's fair or not, I'm buying into the narrative that they are an excellent regular season team and they are not seasoned or experienced enough to face the heavyweight juggernauts that await them in the Western Conference in the postseason. I do believe this is a team that will contend. I don't believe that this is a team that will contend this season.
Oh, okay. That's a good caveat for the folks that might be a little angry at you for bemoaning the potential for the Canucks to win. One thing I'm curious about with the Canucks vis-a-vis the notion of, like, can they get over the hump against a good team? You know, have they peaked too early? I wonder about that with Quinn Hughes and the Norris, just a sidebar for a second. Like, we just talked about Nashville. I fully expect when we do the next awards watch that Roman Josi is going to be in the top 3 for the Norris. he might even have like Hart Trophy contention this year because of how good he's been for that team since the whole canceled U2 show sphere thing. Quinn's still leading amongst defensemen in scoring. Makar's right on his tail. Makar's got him in points per game. And then Josi is a bit farther back as far as points. I don't think he'll be able to catch Quinn. But I wonder, you know, the Quinn Hughes for Norris thing has been such a slam dunk all year. Does his star fade a little bit when the Canucks struggle a little bit down the stretch?
Yeah, he had the narrative too, right? We at the beginning of the season, remember, we were talking about all three Hughes brothers winning trophies. That was like, oh my, can you imagine?
That's legitimately a thing that we said on the show. And I look back at it now and I'm like, where did it all go wrong, Luke and Jack?
Right? So, yes, absolutely. But, I mean, look, he can make a late stretch. He can get a bunch of points and then put himself firmly back in the conversation, or at least as a finalist. But, yeah, hard to bet against Roman Josi right now. Like, especially, like, if this continues to the end of the season, you're right. He could actually elbow out, say, an Austin Matthews in the Hart Trophy vote.
Incredible. He's been incredible. The team I've soured on for me, I'll stay in the West as well, is the Winnipeg Jets. Like, the Jets, for the whole season, the story of the Jets has been not only Connor Hellebuyck playing well in goal, not only are them getting some really good offensive contributions, including from players they acquired in the Pierre-Luc Dubois deal, but they were a stout defensive team. They were one of the best 5-on-5 defensive teams in this league, to the point where the analytics community was ahead of the curve on Winnipeg, saying, hey, you guys are all sleeping on the Jets. Watch out for this team. And then lo and behold, at one point, they were leading the Central. In the last month, they're 17th in the league in expected goals against per 60, which is not a good look for a team that has been very solid defensively the entire run. If they're losing the thread there, I don't think Connor Hellebuyck can carry them as far as I thought they'd go if their whole team was playing as well as it was. They've hit a bump. Their record reflects it. And even though I think that they're still a team that you don't necessarily want to play in the first round, they've lost a little bit of that luster that they had earlier this season, where you could squint hard enough and see the Jets potentially playing for the Stanley Cup this year.
So on to a topic that much of the hockey world is discussing, rather unfortunately, quite frankly. We should be focusing on other things as it pertains to Zach Hyman. Unfortunately, this is what a lot of people are focusing on. So Zach Hyman hits the 50-goal mark. He sets the record for the oldest NHL player to reach 50 goals for the first time in his career, 31 years of age, which is remarkable in itself. He's had an incredible stretch in his entire career, but with the Edmonton Oilers, every single year he just seems to improve and improve and build and build up until the crescendo here, which is 50 goals. Main reason why people are discussing him, of course, is a viral TikTok rant by former Sportsnet writer and Steve Dangle podcast network host Andrew Berkshire, who criticized the media for focusing on Hyman's, quote, blue-collar, quote, aesthetic, while ignoring the fact that he comes from an extraordinarily wealthy family. In essence, he was arguing that Zach Hyman was a 50-goal scorer because his parents were rich. Berkshire United hockey media and social media and its backlash against those comments, and eventually clarified them as being more about the economic disparity for entry into the hockey world than anything else. Look, I think that was the wrong thing to focus on. I think that, very, very attention, seeking attention, grabbing behavior evident there. What did you think of just the discourse and the video being made?
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, now Zach Hyman, rich parents' advantages in life is going to be, you know, tethered to him like a trailer, no matter where he goes. I mean, it's going to be like Jamie Benn memes and things of that nature that we've seen in hockey Twitter, where, you know, he's going to lift the Stanley Cup and people are going to be like, don't lift it too high or else the money will fall out of it from your dad. I mean, it's just, that's where we are with it. And it kind of sucks for him. But look, I think it's completely reasonable to mention that Zach Hyman had an untypical advantage growing up as a young hockey player. Okay. It's not just that his family was rich. It's that his father purchased teams and leagues that his son played for, and also purchased an entire scouting service in his son's draft year. Like, it's okay to say that. It's a very unusual upbringing for an NHL player, but it's completely unreasonable to extrapolate that Hyman's NHL success is based on any of those advantages. Like, as much as the NHL is an old boys network, Arda, it's also a meritocracy on the ice. And he earned his time at the University of Michigan. He earned his time with Austin Matthews. He's earned his time with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Like we've talked about in the show before, that being able to play with elite talent and produce with elite talent is a talent in and of itself. Not everybody you stick with those guys produces.
This is what I want to say about this. The video that I care about is the mic'd up video when Zach Hyman got his 50th goal. The Oilers tweeted it out. And the thing that stuck out to me about that video is every single one of his teammates were overjoyed and elated when he got his 50th goal. You could see it on their faces. You heard it through the microphone. That was one of the coolest mic'd up moments I've ever seen in the NHL. My favorite part, sneaky, he gets on the bench and Corey Perry looks at him and says, "Welcome to the club." Ah, let's go, Corey
exactly.
Perry.
And going back, buddy. And again, you think about how the tidal wave of criticism that Berkshire received for this video, it does stem from the fact that Hyman is, without question, one of the most well-liked players in this league, a ray of sunshine on the teams on which he plays. And again, like somebody you have to give credit for potting over 50 goals. I mean, it's a great story and maybe not worthy of the Masterton. My God, Hockey News, what are you thinking? But certainly worthy of praise and not worthy of the unreasonable things that were attached to his success by Berkshire in that video.
All right, let's go back to the playoff conversation that we were having earlier. You mentioned the New York Rangers as a team that you are befuddled by, curious about. So why don't we have a little deep dive into the New York Rangers as we head to the postseason and bring on a special guest.
All right, joining us now on the drop, Molly Walker of the New York Post in the Up and the Blue Seats podcast. We're going to talk Rangers in a second because the Rangers are your expertise, but you and I have both been to Washington, D.C. many times, and I was curious to get your reaction to the fact that the Caps are going to stay in that arena until 2050, apparently, with a deal that they made with the District of Columbia. The project that they were going to have over in Virginia and Potomac Yards fell apart, wasn't going to happen. The big move to the suburbs isn't going to happen. They're staying in D.C. What do you think about the experience of going to D.C. and seeing the Caps? Are you happy they're staying?
I'm a big fan. I'll be honest, I don't know the nuances of why they were looking to move, why that was a target for them, why. I mean, I know it's close to Virginia, so I guess the location makes a little sense, but Virginia, our nation's capital, I think that our nation's capital has a lot more to offer, if you ask me. Zach Jones might disagree being from Virginia, but I love going to Washington. I love going and seeing all the sites, seeing all the monuments. It's beautiful that time of for playoffs there that time of year. I'm a big fan of Washington. It's definitely one of my favorite road cities. I don't know why they would want to leave.
It's hard for me to divorce the fact that like they played in that city, like as in that arena during like their glory Ovechkin years. You know, when I think about the Capitals, I think about, you know, driving through DC, like you said, and seeing the monuments and going to those games and going to the bars afterwards and going to the Irish Channel afterwards with all the writers and stuff. And like, I don't know, they just seem like such a DC team now that it's hard for me to square them moving to Alexandria, even though if it's only a hop, skip and a jump over the Potomac. But anyways, we'll see how many playoff games you and I see there this postseason.
Yeah.
Who's to say? But we know we're going to see a few games at MSG as well. The Rangers, what can you say? They're challenging for the President's Trophy. They've been a dominant regular season team. Can they win it all, Molly Walker?
I think they can. Who's to say they can't? I think their chances are just as good as any of the top contending teams this season. And it kind of, I've said this a bunch of times, it kind of has felt like this season is wide open in general. It kind of just feels like anything could happen at this point. It's been a pretty wide open season, and teams that weren't supposed to be good are good and vice versa. So I think that the Rangers are right there, and they've been a pretty consistent, aside from January, really was the only month that they kind of hit a few major speed bumps in terms of results. But otherwise they have been at the top of the league all season long and a bunch of categories. They've been in first place in the Metropolitan Division since October 24th.
That's wild.
It is pretty wild. So who's to say that it couldn't be them at this point with the track record they've left this season.
What's your biggest area of concern for the Rangers going into the playoffs? Like, what could be the thing that ultimately subverts their chances of trying to win the cup?
Well, I think that I look at what happened last season, and I do think that there are a lot of different reasons for that first round exit against the Devils. And one of them being that there were probably a few too many cooks in the kitchen with Vladimir Tarasenko and Patrick Kane, a lot of big names just floating around. And I think that that was a layer to it. But you look at Artemi Panarin's playoffs, you look at Mika Zibanejad's playoffs, and the Rangers are going to need their top guns to be their top guns. And if they're not, then they will not make it out of the first round. They won't go anywhere because they are such a top heavy lineup. They have been for years. They are so reliant on the production from their top players that if that is not there, it would be really difficult for them to get past anybody, no matter who they draw in the first round. So I'm looking at Artemi Panarin to continue this absolutely unbelievable regular season that he's had. Hart Trophy worthy, if you ask me. Mika Zibanejad, same thing. He obviously went through his little hiccup. The season went way longer than he probably would have liked without a 5-on-5 goal, but he has completely snapped out of it, and he's just been attacking the game lately and really ramping his game up, working toward the playoffs. So that's the biggest concern there, is if the top guns can be the top guns, because we just saw last season what happens when they're not.
Panarin's so interesting to me because, like, he had such an acknowledgement of what went wrong last postseason, and he took it personally. I mean, obviously, he shaved his head and stuff too. I mean, like, he took it real personally that he didn't perform up to standards in that playoff. What has it been about him in particular this season? Is it line mates? Is it something he's doing differently that's allowed him to get to these offensive heights that he's reached?
I definitely think that the line deserves a lot of credit as a unit. Laviolette putting Alexis Lafreniere on the opposite wing of Artemi Panarin was just striking gold. It really was. And when you take into consideration how many different line combinations this team has seen over the last few seasons, the fact that that never came into play really on a consistent basis is almost shocking.
Yeah.
But they made it work with Filip Hedl. They've made it work even more with Vincent Trocheck since Hedl went down. And the line is, Vincent Trocheck told me that it is the most complete line that he's ever played on in his career. So I definitely think that his line mates do deserve credit. But I mean, Artemi Panarin is the motor of that line. He's been shooting a lot more this season too. Mm-hmm. But his playmaking abilities as well have really taken a step. His dynamic on the ice is even more impressive than it has been when he first came to New York. And I do think that part of it is coming from last season and the playoffs and confronting that it was a major disappointment.
Yeah.
Maybe even allowed him to play a little bit more free this season, that he's already gone through two postseasons almost not living up to his potential, not living up to the production that he wanted to provide. And it was kind of like, all right, well, you know, maybe third time's a charm. And, you know, and I think that, you know, at this point he's been through it, you know, how can he get out to the other side? So yeah. It's been really impressive. And he definitely has been playing a lot lighter this season than he has since he came to New York.
Makes sense. Wanted to ask you about a potential first round opponent for the Rangers, depending on how things break in the standings. And that's the Philadelphia Flyers. Looks like they're going to import Ivan Fedotov from the KHL to play behind Sam Ersson in goal. That'll help them out because goaltending has not been very good for them lately, yeah. As John Tortorella kind of subtweeted his own goalie, so to speak. Could this team win a playoff series? The Flyers, you've seen them a couple times. What do you think?
I mean, again, like the playoffs, it's who's to say, you know, like, there's so many things that can happen. If they do play the Rangers and Panarin goes cold and Mika Zibanejad goes cold, it's anybody's game at that point. So I definitely think that the way Tortorella has the flaw, and they're the perfect example of a team that nobody had any expectations for this season, and then having a really, really good season, coming from very low expectations. So I think that the way that team is playing, they've had a chip on their shoulder. I think the way that Tortorella runs that team, anything is possible.
You could stay in the East, you go to the West, in the totality of the NHL. Is there one team that's really impressed you vis-a-vis their chances to maybe go all the way this year?
First team that I'm thinking about just as kind of a dark horse. I don't know if I necessarily would predict that they're going to the final, but I just think what Tampa has been able to do.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, like I've covered that team a lot in the playoffs in the last few years. I covered them against the Islanders, covered them against the Rangers. And this season was like the first regular season that they've kind of gone through it. They, you know, it wasn't an easy year for them at all. But now, again, before the playoffs, it's kind of like, oh, don't count Tampa Bay out. You can never count. You just can't do it. You can't count Tampa Bay out. I don't know if they're going all the way to the final, but that, if you're going to ask me for a dark horse team, though, you just never know. You just can never count those guys out ever, really.
I was going to say, it's weird thinking about them as like the underdog, but you're right. They kind
of
are.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And they are 110% the team that the Rangers do not want to see in the first round. But that being said, just to play devil's advocate here, if the Rangers did see the Lightning and beat the Lightning, the mental boost and the confidence boost that would come with that for the Rangers might be exactly what they need to really win the whole dang thing. So
there you
could kind of see it go either way. But even still, I know all Ranger fans are like, anybody but Tampa Bay, except for me, because I want to go to Tampa Bay.
As do we all. Kayaking, the tiki bar, all of it. We're all there for it. Molly Walker, we're there for you. Thank you so much for taking your time to be on The Drop. You can read her in the New York Post and listen to her on the Up in the Blue Seats podcast as well. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody, here on The Drop, it's time for Mascot Madness. Woo! We are selecting the greatest mascot in all of the land and all of the hockey world forevermore. Whoever wins this competition will have bragging rights for the rest of eternity. We are joining the madness in March by having our own Mascot Madness. Round one was insane. A lot of mascots are upset. Some are disappointed. They won the fan vote, but they didn't move on in the tournament. We were very clear on our rules. The fan vote that Greg Wyshynski puts up on X, Twitter, puts up the polls, that is only P-A-R-T, part of the process.
Yes, exactly. Part of the process.
That's right. We were clear as day, and we will continue that trajectory into the second round, the round of 16. Let's get to it right now. In the weird stuff category, the number one seed overall, Gritty, facing, this is a big matchup, Stinger of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Gritty ran away with the fan vote, 80%. Any issues here?
No, I think we have to give the people what they want, and 80% is a pretty emphatic win for Gritty against Stinger. Stinger, fare thee well. Buzz off, buddy. It's Gritty time.
I will remind everybody that there's a Getty image of me sitting on Gritty's knee that could not factor into this vote, unfortunately, not strong enough. Victor E. Green of the Dallas Stars won 54.7% of the vote. Went really hard on social media, Wish. Went after Big Pork, I believe he called it, defeating the Carolina Hurricanes Stormy in the fan vote. How do you lean on this one?
I lean Victor E. Green for the simple fact that if we're really being honest about Carolina Hurricanes mascots, they do have an actual pig that they sometimes bring to the games. and I think that might be as beloved or more beloved than Stormy. So let's give it to Victor E. Green, a very underrated mascot who has certainly taken to this tournament in a pretty emphatic way. And the people did put over Victor E. Green, 54.7% of the vote.
Yes, Victor E. Green moves on. In the Birds and Aquatics division, Wild Wing took 57.4% of the vote in the matchup against Iceberg of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm fine with that. I'm going Wild Wing here.
Buddy, let's find that webbed glass slipper because we got ourselves a Cinderella. An 8 seed out of the Bird of Aquatics region takes out Iceberg. Wild Wing, 57.4% of the vote from the people. We both think he goes to. We're seeing it before our eyes. We're seeing a miracle run right now for Wild Wing in this tournament.
Well, it might be a very tough next round for Wild Wing, because awaiting the Anaheim Ducks mascot is the winner that we will crown right now between Chance the Gila Monster of the Vegas Golden Knights and SJ Sharkey of the San Jose Sharks. SJ took 65.5% of the vote, so he's got the confidence of the majority of the people. But my goodness, if there was one mascot to sway the vote with all of their content in this tournament, it is Chance the Gila Monster. And I don't know, my loyalty is for sale here, Wish. How are you seeing this?
Well, we have to give Chance some credit, because Chance tweeted at me, "So Wyshynski got all the Sharks crybabies to vote for him, but my advocate Arda knows I'm the final boss. The Gila Monster needs your vote." Listen, if there's any way to cater to the selection committee, it's through blatant references to the WWE Bloodline Cody Rhodes feud. And so as much as it pains me, because I do not like Chance as a mascot, as I've said on the show before, I got to give Chance credit here. I think SJ Sharkey is a great mascot, but I have to give it to Chance in this matchup, I think.
Ladies and gentlemen, I speak on behalf of the wise man for Chance the Gila Monster. I can't do a Heyman impression.
No, it's good. That was a fine Heyman. That was a fine Heyman. Yeah.
Congratulations, Chance. You move on to the next round in the Birds and Aquatics division. All right. To the, as you mentioned it, Cats and One Dog division. The Cats and One Dog division. Yeah,
I know. I still think that Howler looks like a cat. Okay, I will stand by it. If you just glance at Howler, looks like a feline to me. That's all I'm saying.
All right, let's start with this matchup. So Howler won 59.9% of the vote against Bailey. That's a massive matchup, but Howler won the fan vote.
60% of the vote. I mean, that's no joke right there. I think Bailey's a great mascot, but I mean, clearly it's Howler's moment. They don't have an arena, but they do have themselves a popular mascot in Arizona. So we got to give it to Howler there.
They do. And also the Coyotes Twitter account getting in on the fun there too. So Howler will move on in what many people would consider an upset, defeating the number one seed in that division, Bailey. Stanley C. Panther and Nash of the Nashville Predators. Nash got 58.9% of the vote. How do you see this one? It's a 6 versus a 7.
These are two great names. Like Stanley C. Panther, great name. Nash, they found a way to get Nashville in the name of the... So I sometimes I just marvel at it when I see Nash's name. I'd get Nash here. I think I've always liked Nash for being a more... He's one of those like active mascots, you know, really like rappelling from the ceiling and kind of doing that thing. I've always appreciated that about him. So I'll take Nash here.
All right, Nash versus Howler in the next round. That's going to be a...
Wow.
A slobber knocker, indeed. Dogs and Woodland Creatures minus Howler. NJ Devil won 52.2% of the vote against Bernie the St. Bernard. I have no problem with that. I think NJ advances here. It wasn't a decisive vote, but I say NJ gets the nod on this one.
Arda, I've seen this matchup before in 2001, and maybe Bernie the St. Bernard should have found a way to steal Ray Bourque from the Bruins in order to take care of the Devils. Because in this matchup, obviously, he falls short. NJ Devil moves on.
Your revenge is finally complete. Lucky you. Childhood wish.
This is not going to help me with all the Avalanche fans who think I still hold a gripe from some Stanley Cup final that happened like over 20 years ago. But maybe I do. I don't know.
Younger Wish is just elated. Finally, Mick E. Moose won 54.5% of the vote over Carlton the Bear.
I'll leave this to you. I was shocked by this. I thought Carlton was a very popular mascot, but Mick E. Moose pulls the fan vote. Where do you fall on this one?
I don't know. This is a pick'em to me. I almost feel like we should flip a coin on this one. I'm shocked, but I'm leaning Mickey Moose only because I'm so surprised that Mickey Moose defeated Carlton in the vote.
Yeah.
It's not that Mickey Moose is a bad mascot. The name is great. I'm fine with the moose motif. It's just Carlton's so iconic, and Carlton is down bad.
Do you think this is anti-Leafs? Do you think this is like how they had to scrap the player draft because nobody picked Phil Kessel and Brian Burke was like, it's because he plays in Toronto. Like, do you think this is an anti-Leafs vote?
Yeah, I feel like it is. But you know what? Look, the people have spoken. I'm going to up the importance of the fan vote here. So congratulations, Mickey Moose. You're moving on.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I'll back you on it. Again, my biggest thing on this one is I had no idea what the name of the Jets mascot was.
And now you're glad you know. So there you have it. So moving on in the tournament are Gritty and Victory Green, Wild Wing, Chance the Gila Monster, Howler, Nash, MJ Devil, and Mick E. Moose. We will debate those matchups next Tuesday. Thanks for listening to us here on The Drop every Tuesday, Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well as the NHL on ESPN YouTube. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we will see you on Tuesday.
Bye.